Okay, our message tonight is going to be in John chapter 4, but I want you to turn first off to Matthew chapter 17. I've got a few things there with me. Verse 1, it says, "After 6 days Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John his brother, and bringeth them up into an high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them. And his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elias," that's Elijah, "talking with him. Then answered Peter, and said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us make here 3 tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elias." Now, in what Peter began to say here, and really, truthfully, in Peter's spirit here, there was probably nothing that he said that he didn't mean for good. Absolutely nothing. Verse 4, "Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord." That's a good way to address him. Lord, that's who he is. Nothing wrong with that. "He said unto him, Lord, it's good for us to be here." That was true. It was good for them to be there. "Then answered Peter and said to Jesus and said, Lord, it's good for us to be here. If thou wilt." That's the proper way to ask. If thou wilt. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. "Then answered Peter, said unto Jesus, Lord, it's good for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us make..." Uh-oh. Here's the beginning of our problem in everything. Everything. "Let us make." What Peter says next is why this is the beginning of error in everything. He says, "Let us make here 3 tabernacles. One for thee, and one for Moses and one for Elijah." As sincere and as well-meaning as Peter is here, as all the disciples were that stood there with him, if they had been left to do what they desired to do, they would have worshipped, first of all, what they built. What they built. Their tabernacles. Christ is the tabernacle. He is the dwelling place of his people, wherein we dwell in perfect completion in Christ. He does the building. In all regards, he does the building. That's the honor that's been given to him of the Father. He does the building. And he makes us to dwell in him, and he builds his church, and he makes others to dwell in him. Does he use us to do that? There's a glorious oneness in the way that he does that. In any way you look at it, from any angle, there's nothing but good in it. But he does it. He does it. Well, the second thing, because they would have worshipped what they built, they would have also worshipped the law and the prophets, Moses and Elijah. That is, if my tabernacle began because I built it, I'll worship my knowledge of the law and of the prophets of the scriptures. There may be a tabernacle that goes by the name of Christ. They would have been there if they'd have built those, wouldn't they? But it would have all be worshiping me. Every bit of it. If I build it. Same with Peter here. If he was allowed to do this, and James and John were allowed to do this, they would be worshiping themselves. There would be no worship of Christ whatsoever. Whatsoever. And they meant well, but here's how we're kept from our well-meaning error, however well-meaning it be. Here's how we're kept from it. If I have ever in my life preached the truth to you, and am certain the Lord has given it to me. It is the past three or four messages, especially Thursday night, and Sunday morning, and tonight. And it's come from a year of trial that's been parallel with other needy brethren's trial. And I'm seeing what the trial's about. I'm seeing what the issue is with myself and with this church. And I've never been as convinced that God has given me the message. And I urge you, listen to those messages again. We don't hear them the first time. And to think that we do is just haughty arrogance. We don't hear them the first time. I sent you all some messages this past week that blessed my heart that another pastor preached. And if you've listened to them and been blessed by them yourself, you'll probably find this amazing. The first time I listened to them, I got nothing from them. Partly because I was looking at the man, and partly because I took offense with the man. But I went back and listened to him over and over and over, and it has just been, I've just heard something dear to my heart, and it's been the Lord talking to me. So go back and listen. There's not a single word I have spoken in any of the messages I preached Thursday night or Sunday morning that I take back. Not a single word. And I went back and listened to them myself. Not a single word. I don't get up here and speak flippantly and off the cuff. I get up here and speak what I have laid down and begged God to give me. And I've never laid down and begged God and been just laid out to where He didn't give me anything like I have been for about the past month or so. So that when it came in such a way, in such an hour, that I knew I didn't get this. It just didn't come of me. It just didn't. But it's needful. It's very needful. And it's exactly what's needful for the hour. And I know without a doubt it won't return unto the Lord void. It will not. It never does, and it won't. It just won't. Now here's how we're going to be saved from what we say and what's well-meaning, but what will divide and separate if left to ourselves. Verse 5, while he yet spake. Oh, thank the Lord for divine interruption. Right in the middle of speaking. While he yet spake, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. That's how they were led in the wilderness. That's how we're led now. A bright cloud overshadowed them, and behold, a voice out of the cloud which said, this is my beloved Son. In whom? In whom? The one in whom I am. God, who is I am, well pleased. Hear. Ye. Him. Now I'm thankful for that. And I look at verse 6. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. They trembled. They fell on their face. And that's when we're strong. That's when we're strong. When we're so afraid that we can't even dare lift up our face off the ground. We are spent. And just laid out in utter weakness. That's when we're going to be the strongest. Well, once he does that, how then are we going to be saved from looking to ourselves and hearing ourselves and making ourselves the standard whereby everything is right or wrong? How are we going to do that? Verse 7. And Jesus came and touched them. One was talking, but he touched all of them, because that's what they're all thinking. Touched them, and he said, he came, he touched them, and he said, arise, be not afraid. How many times have we heard that phrase? We heard it Thursday night, we heard it Sunday, we heard it right now. Be not afraid. Be not afraid. And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no man, not Moses and not Elijah, Jesus only. Now you turn with me, if you will, to John chapter 4. John chapter 4. The title of the message tonight is, Who is Speaking to Me? Who is speaking to me? John chapter 4, verse 5. Then cometh Christ to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. You remember, I pointed out to you Sunday, that the taking away and giving to the firstborn was not the taking away from the rest of the children in that earthly father's house. It was the salvation of all the children in the house. And Jacob took the double portion from the son who was literally born first. That was Reuben. He took it from him because Reuben was unstable as water. And he gave the firstborn to him that was literally born after Reuben, but who really all along was the firstborn son. And that was Joseph. And that was the salvation of all the true children in Jacob's house. And what we learn from that is God took the right of the firstborn from that first one who appeared to be the firstborn son, who was Adam, because he was unstable as water. And if he would have left it in his hand and left us under the dominion of Adam, we'd died. We died in him, and we would just, it'd have been division and separation and nothing but death. But he took it out of his hand before he ever gave it into Adam's hand and gave it to the one who was born after Adam, who appeared to be the one born second, but who all along was the firstborn son. And that was Christ Jesus, the head, the Savior, the Son of God, the Lord, the one who is the bishop and shepherd of our souls. And by God doing that from before the foundation of the world, it was the salvation of all the true children of God, the chosen elect children of God, chosen in Him before time ever began. And so we see, brethren, from that, He's teaching us that when we have been given a heart where Christ is first, no matter what it is that we give to Him, it's because He's first given it to us, and we haven't given Him anything that He hasn't already given to us. And it's not the taking away from our children. It's not the taking away from the others that may be suffering amongst us right here. It is indeed that which is going to save us and be the furtherance of us and the help we need forever and ever. If a husband is sick and a child is sick in the house, which one is it just the order and the most important to tend to minister to help to get well? Not neglecting the child at all. Not at all. But if the child's going to have bread brought home by the father and given to them, which is going to be the strength and perpetual strength of that child for as long as they are under his roof, then it's going to be, the important thing is that head be nourished, that husband be nourished, and that food be given. That sounds backwards to us, and that sounds like the taking away to us, but it's not, because the honor is Christ. You see that? Christ is given. He's given. And he's going to give the faith to where we're going to give to Him and know that He's the one that's given. Now, all this time later, here's how we see that this is so. All this time later, here is a well. Look at the next verse. Now Jacob's well was there. Are we talking about that physical well? No. It was there, but Jacob's well was there. The one who was the well to Jacob. The one who was the firstborn to Jacob. The one who was the reason why Jacob took that from Reuben and gave it to Joseph. The reason why he took all and gave it into the hands of Christ. He was there. This is Christ, Jacob's well. The well of water, the well of life. This is Christ, and He's there. And he's literally in that place. He's literally in that very place where Jacob literally took that physical and gave it to his firstborn son. And now all these many years later, he comes to Samaria near the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph, and now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, give me to drink. You remember Sunday when we saw Elijah, the servant of God, was sent to that widow woman in Sarepta, and all he said to her at first was, give me to drink. You know Jacob's well was there too. Christ was speaking to that woman at Sarepta just as real as he was speaking to this woman right here at this well. Verse 8, now get this, for his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. I want to give you three things here on this. Right here in the midst of others, as we hear the gospel preached, sometimes he makes us hit our face right here while we're sitting. Without moving a muscle, he makes us hit our face. Just like he did Peter and James and John. And he comes right where we are, and he touches us, and he says, fear not. And he raises our eyes, and we look up, and we don't see any man. We see Jesus Christ only. The man. Jesus Christ. But sometimes, at first, all we see is a man. An earthen vessel. And sometimes the Lord waits until literally all the disciples have gone away. And then he uses the word that he delivered to make me hear his voice. And hit my face, and to know it's just me and him. And it's been him talking to me the whole time. And he does that to make me and you know that while we're away buying meat and thinking we're giving something to him and we're going to do something for him, he's doing everything. He's doing everything. They weren't even there. They weren't even there. All right, verse 9. Let's see that. Let's see how that works just exactly. He's going to give us a personal illustration of it, just like he did Thursday night with Peter, just like he did Sunday with the widow at Sarepta. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the true Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. What did the widow woman see when Elijah spoke to her? She saw a man who was a Jew speaking to her, a woman who was a Gentile. What did this woman see? She saw the same thing. She didn't question herself. She questioned the one standing before, because she thought this was just a man standing before. You know, that widow at Sarepta said, as the Lord God liveth, I don't have a cake. I have a handful of meal in a barrel. He didn't ask her to give anything that wasn't in the barrel. He didn't beseech her to give anything that wasn't in the barrel. He said, just give me what's in the barrel. Faith was trusting that what was in the barrel wouldn't ever stop being in the barrel. She said, I'm gathering two sticks that I might go in and dress it for me and my son that we may eat and die. Both questioned the one standing right before them, but both questioned the same one. The Lord God, the Master himself. Verse 10, Jesus answered and said unto her, here's where we get our title, if thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, And he would have given thee living water. The Lord often allows us the space he allowed this woman right here, space he allowed that widow at Sarepta, space he's allowed us time and time again in this place, and will continue to allow us in this place. Not that it's an excuse for any believer to question him. It doesn't excuse it. But the Lord often does this to make us to see just how slow we are to know that Christ, the gift of God, eternal life, the well, the water, the bread, the meal, that is there, that shall never perish nor be diminished, to make us know that he's the one that's been speaking to us all along. You know, when men heard the word of the Lord through his prophets, we find them replying this way sometimes. They gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said unto them, "You take too much upon you." Seeing, that's always a problem when we think that somebody's taking too much upon them. Seeing, they're looking with these eyes, with just these eyes. Seeing, all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them, wherefore then lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord? That's how the word preached is always received. It's either received as it truly is, or it's received as a man just trying to lift himself up above the congregation. That's how it's received. And God lets us receive it both ways sometimes to teach us what we need to be taught. You know, Moses answered when they said that. He said, "What's Aaron that you're murmuring against him? Why are you murmuring against Aaron? He's just a servant of the Lord." Moses defended him. You know, not very long before that in Numbers chapter 12, you know who it was murmuring against Moses who said the exact same thing and said, "We're all holy and you take too much upon yourself"? It was Aaron saying it to Moses. Is it surprising that unbelieving sinners said what they said to Christ and doubted him? Is it surprising that Aaron, a believer, did that to God's messenger? Listen to what this woman at the well says to Christ, the Son of God, who is the Master, and listen to what she says to him face to face. Verse 11, "The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us this, who gave us this well, and drank thereof himself, and his children, his cattle?" That sound like what I just said to you? "Wherefore lift ye up yourself above the congregation of the Lord?" You know, the disciples, we just saw the disciples in the mount speaking, just speaking hastily. How many times do we see the believer meaning well in what they said, but doing the same thing? Philip had walked with him. Philip had heard him preach. Philip had been blessed by him. Philip had heard him and rejoiced and said, "This is the Son of God speaking to me." And yet, face to face, Philip turned to him and he said, "Lord, show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. We'll believe you." They said that to the Lord himself. That man who walked with him and believed him and knew him. And the Lord said, "Have I been so long time with you, yet thou hast not known me, Philip?" All of a sudden, you act like, when you've been blessed all before, all of a sudden you act like, now I'm your enemy? That you don't even believe me and know me? "He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. How saith then, show us the Father?" He's God. Now, the Lord told the disciples, it was written before, he said, "It's written before that you'll forsake me." And they all said, "That might be written about him, but that's not written about me." And they said that to the Lord himself. This is our hope, to be patient and to wait. It's my hope to be patient and to wait. I'm learning something now as a pastor that I know my pastor was learning when he was trying to pastor me. Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, who it is that saith to thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. She's going to know. Anytime that we're like this, we're going to know. We're going to know. But sometimes we don't know at first. But we're going to know. Well, the believer's going to know. Now, God's going to interrupt us as we're talking. He's going to interrupt us. Christ is going to interrupt us. Look at verse 13. If we're His, that's what's going to happen. Jesus answered, said unto her. She just keeps talking, but He answered her. He interrupted her. He said, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. Talking about that earthly well she saw. You realize that He asked her to give him something. It wasn't even hers. You know, with the widow at Sarepta, He used just a man to ask, let me back up. He's not asking. He didn't say, go and ask the widow at Sarepta. He said, go tell her to do it. And He says here, the Lord commanded her. And the Lord said the reason she's going to do it is because I've commanded her. This is a sweet command. This is what He's doing in this whole story right here that we're reading about, this account we're reading about with this woman at the well. It's what He did with the woman at Sarepta. But He's asked this woman at the well to give something that it wasn't even hers. He asked that widow at Sarepta to give some meal that she felt like was hers. But you know, in both cases, either one was theirs. He'd given them both. Given them both. He's given me mine, given you yours, and it's not mine or yours. What do you have that you didn't receive of Him? It's His. And He's not said give you something He hadn't given to you. When He comes in the first hour, He don't say, give me your heart first without giving you the heart that He tells you then, now give me. That's right. And He don't say, give Him anything He's put in your hand that He ain't first put in your hand. Faith is trusting Him who is the giver. He said, if you knew the gift of God, and Christ is the gift of God. He is the gift of God. He said, if you knew it was Him speaking to you, you knew that. He said to her, whosoever drinketh this water, this earthly well, verse 13, he's going to thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. Never thirst. See, He's teaching us something. He's teaching us, He uses earthly things to teach us. You know, He didn't give us this earth right here to stomp on it and say, man, that earth is hard and solid, so I'm just going to lay down here and wrap my arms around this old world and hang on to it with all I got because this is terra firma. It's strong. No, He gave us this to give us some understanding that He's the foundation. He's the one that is more solid than this. This is going to perish and be burned up. He's going to remain. He's going to remain. And that's what He's doing with this earthly well, teaching that. And that's what He was doing with that physical meal with that woman at Sarepta. He's saying, whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. It's not going to be a well outside you. It's going to be a well inside you. And it's going to make every other well outside you to know when you look at it, you're going to say, that just reminds me of the well inside me. That reminds me of the everlasting water, Christ the well. This woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. And she hadn't quite understood the master, has she? She thinks He means that she won't have to come and draw out of that physical well anymore when He gives her this water. Is that going to be the case? No, she's going to have to do that. She's going to have to work and come to that well and let down the bucket and get water out of that well and take it home and drink it just to have some physical life while he gives her life, while he gives that physical life to her on this earth. She doesn't understand what he says at first. You know, that tells me, and what I'm seeing here, men aren't going to understand this gospel at first. Sometimes it takes a little while. Sometimes it takes a long while. Sometimes it takes years and years and years. But you think of the peace that he gives. When he gives peace, you think how much more abundance he gave that woman at Sarepta by giving him the peace that he gives in the heart. He said, I don't give peace like the world gives it. Giving you my peace in the heart. Think how much more in abundance he gave her when he made her to know by faith that what she needed, as she needed it, would be given by him. Rather than giving her more than that so she could store it up in her barns. You know what a blessing that was? When he does that, you know what happens? We start worrying about how we're going to keep the barn and how we're going to keep everything in the barn and how we're going to keep all that. And you know what that is? They're not any peace in it at all. It's nothing but worry and anxious thought and trying to decide how we're going to do this because we think we're doing this. Think we're keeping it in the barn. But he gave her something better than that. He gave her the joy of a child. Think about this now. Do you remember, you adults sitting here, have you ever thought about this and really thought, what was the joy? What was my real joy that I had as a child in my father's house? What was it that was the most joyful thing of all to me? I remember a day. I thought about this today. I remember a day I was in college, and I remember a day driving down the highway, and I worked at two places. And the one place was a restaurant right here that was a seafood restaurant. The other restaurant was up about not even a quarter mile. You could see one from the other, and it was a barbecue restaurant. And I worked in both. One I worked in 3 days a week, one I worked in every other day. I was working in both, managing both of them. And I was driving along one day, and something was bothering me, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I was driving between, I remember this, I thought of this today. I remember that. I was driving along, and I looked at those two places, and it hit me. Clay, you don't have your father to provide for you anymore. You're going to have to work the rest of your life to provide for yourself. Do you know what God does when he enters into the heart? What Christ does when he enters into the heart and he makes us as children and the joy and the peace that he gives us? He makes us to know you're under the roof of your everlasting Father and he's providing everything. He has, and he is, and he shall. And the peace, unlike anything this world can give you, enters the heart. And it does. The believer, God's church, God's bride's given peace of the full provision. My peace, Christ said, not as the world giveth, my peace. And she follows after her husband, after the one who's her provider. And you and I can tell of others of that peace, but we dare not attempt, to take it upon ourselves to try to create that peace or build something or until God has given that peace so that it's of him and not of us. Now this earthly water is only going to cease being our life when Christ becomes the living water. And then we're going to come to this earthly well and draw I'm talking about this well right here. This church right here, this is the cruse, this is the barrel, this is the well. And we're going to have to keep coming back to it and keep drawing out of it. But he said, I'm going to always keep providing everything you need in the barrel, in the cruse, in the well. Well, I thought you said I was the well, and that he was the well of water dwelling up in me. Oh, yeah, all that too. We're talking about oneness. We're talking about being inseparably united to him and having everything provided by him. That's right. And then, as he makes us up, but then in the midst of all of this, as we're coming to the well, we're like those disciples who gone off to buy him something to eat. A lot of times we get to thinking, well, we need to go buy him something to eat. And he makes us to see over and over. He causes us to sort of lose that peace. But then he leaves us a little space to start questioning. And he makes us to know again the gift of God and who it is that's speaking to us. So that we see that while we were away in all our unbelief and trying to buy meat for him, give to him, do for him, while we were away, he was doing some great things right there before us. We didn't even know he's doing it. Now let's go on and see what he does. First thing he's going to do as he does all this, he's going to make us to know that even though we deny what we really are, he knows what we really are, but what we really are is what we are in him. Not what we are. But he's going to make us to know that he knows what we really are and what we really think about ourselves. Now first thing he's going to make us to know is that he knows we're adulterers. Verse 16, Jesus said unto her, Go, call thy husband, and come hither. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Now, she really don't know who she's talking to, does she? This is God omniscient, all-knowing, knows everything. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, Thou hast well said. You have well said. I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. You've said truly. She wasn't saying it to speak truth. She was saying it to deceptively hide what she was. But she said the truth. She said the truth. I think I told you this one time about my friend Brian. He was an early believer, and he was talking to a fellow who knew everything there was to know. And Brian didn't. He just was a new convert. He was just telling this fellow what he knew. But what Brian knew was enough to make this fellow get mad and angry. And that fellow said this, I can't believe what you've just told me. And when Brian told me that, I said, and he spoke truly. He can't. She couldn't either. You and I can't either. Then he's going to make us to know that he knows that we think we're righteous by our religion. But he's going to make us to behold the folly of that. Verse 19, the woman saith unto him, Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Now she's going to get real religious. Anytime somebody here thinks that you're a preacher, oh boy, the tune changes altogether then. I would sooner folks didn't know I was a preacher when I'm talking to them, because I can talk to them and they will talk to me honestly and we can actually have a conversation. When they hear, oh, you're a preacher, then the whole thing changes. Now there's no honesty coming from them anymore. Now watch what she says. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain. Oh, my daddy was my daddy's been, I've come from a line of Baptists so far back, way back. And you say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Well, now my family worshiped this way. You say that they ought to worship this other way, but now let me tell you, my family worshiped this way too, you know. Jesus said unto her, Woman, this is an illustration of Christ the bride. This is an illustration of each individual elect child of God. He says, Woman, believe me. Stop looking to mom and daddy. Stop looking to where they worshiped and in what mountain they worshiped. Stop looking at all that. Believe Christ, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain, not that mountain she was in Samaria where Jacob worshiped, nor yet at Jerusalem where Christ came to. Neither one of those places, because that earthly place is not the place to worship. It's not the place we worship. You won't do that at this mountain or at Jerusalem where you worship the Father. Verse 20, ye worship, ye know not what. That's what he told her. That's hard, wasn't it? That's what he's going to let us know in our heart when he comes. You don't know what you're worshiping. And he's going to do this over and over and over for us and tell us, you don't know what you're worshiping. We know what we worship. Who's he? There's just him standing there. Who's he talking about? We. Just him. He's talking about him and everybody in whom he has revealed himself. We know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. What does he mean by that? She said, you're a Jew. How have you any dealings with me who is a Samaritan? Because the Jews don't have a thing in the world to do with Samaritans. You know what she couldn't see? The way. Couldn't see the way. She couldn't see how that's possible. Christ is King of the Jews. And everybody that he creates this well of water for in the heart, where he cuts away that old unbelieving, defiling, separating fleshly heart and gives a new heart, a well of water springing up, he makes them, whether they came out of Gentiles or they were physically Jews, he makes them all true Jews. And he's the way that does that. He's the only way that does that. Teach me, Lord, he's the only way that does that. Cast forth the bread and wait. He's the only one that does that. But the hour cometh, and it now is. It's coming. She's going to believe, and it's right now. Listen, it's coming that she's going to believe, but right now, because Christ is the faithful one representing her to the Father, it's already fact. Though she don't yet believe him. You get that? The hour's coming, and it now is. He's talking to her. The hour's coming. You're fixing to believe, but you're already perfectly faithful before God, because it is. Isn't that what he's telling us? Listen, thus saith the Lord, this well shall never run dry. This barrel shall never be diminished. This shall be a well of living water springing up. And every handful of meal you have is a handful of meal filled full in your hand out of his hand. And it is never going to diminish. The hour's coming, and it now is. When the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Not looking at earthly barrels and earthly wells and earthly meal and earthly bread and earthly coins and earthly bank accounts and earthly houses and earthly treasures and earthly so-called religious churches that are whatever. Not looking at multitudes. Look in one place. Christ. Christ, 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 Christ. I can't see him. Oh, but can't you? Can't you? That's what faith is. It is seeing. And one day, he's going to make good on the promise he's made, and we're going to see him with natural sight. And he's going to do the same right here. He's going to say, take what I've put in the hand. Not what I hadn't put in the hand, what I have. It's not a blind leap. The problem is, we know he's put it there. We know we got it. And we say, oh, but this is my life. That's the problem. No. You got to worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman saith unto him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. Isn't every believer right now in this day, when it comes right down to it, when they're pressed down and like this, spoken to directly, like the Jesus spoke to this woman right here. Will not every professing Christian say, I know Christ is coming. That's my hope. Well, she knew that. But she didn't know Christ. She didn't know Him. And He stood right there in front of her. She said, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. And when He's come, He will tell us all things. Jesus said unto her. He came to her. He touched her. And now He's going to say something to her. I that speak unto thee am. Well, how much do I have to know to be a believer? You have to know everything. You have to know everything God says about Himself, everything God has promised, everything God has said in this word right here. Whew, I better get studying then. I got a lot to memorize. I got a lot to learn. You're going to know every bit of it when Christ speaks in the heart and He says, I that speak unto thee am. And you'll know everything. You'll know the peace. You'll have all. Well, fourth thing that Christ is going to do in all this is He's going to make His disciples who already believe Him to know that Christ is doing this work. He's called us and He's going to use us, but He's only going to use us once He's made us to know that this is His work. Remember Thursday night? They want to start looking at those multitudes. That's what we want to start looking at. He put them in the Sea of Galilee. He immediately separated them from the multitude. And He put them on the Sea of Galilee, and He brought them into tribulation, and then He brought them to the other side once He had taught them that He is the one doing the work, and then He started healing folks. But He had to do that first so they didn't walk around over there like they was walking around after He fed the 5,000, and the 5,000 started saying, hey, we like Him. And they started saying, sticking out their chests and going, well, look, we... No, He brought them back down from that to see, I'm the one doing the work. What'd He do here? Verse 27, upon this came His disciples. They come upon this whole situation here where He's talking to this woman, and they marvel that He talked with this woman. Yet, no man said, what seekest thou, or why talkest thou with her? This is wisdom, wisdom. They just stood still and to see and hear what it is Christ was doing here. The woman then left her water pot and went her way into the city and saith to the men, come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ? Then they went out of the city and came unto Him. Now all that was taking place. That woman took off. Now He's going to tell His disciples what He's been trying to show them, or not trying. That's a bad word to say. He don't try anything. He's been showing them all along. In the meanwhile, His disciples prayed Him, saying, Master, eat. But He said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore said the disciples one to another, hath any man brought Him aught to eat? Jesus said unto them, my meat is not going to be given me by a man. You're not building me a tabernacle. If you did, you'd be praise that which you built, and you'd worship your knowledge, and you'd try to build my church the same way. You ain't building it that way. It's not going to be built that way. My meat is to do the will of Him that sent me and to finish His work. Christ receives not from us. We receive all from Him. Christ's disciples receive not from men, but receive all from Christ. Christ's preacher Christ doesn't receive anything from His preachers. His preacher receives everything from Him. Christ's church receives nothing from men, but receives everything from Christ. Christ has finished the work, and He is now sending forth those whose meat is Christ. even as his meat is pleasing the Father. And because he will accomplish the work, he has, he is, and he shall. And because he shall, he won't receive meat that any man brings to him, but when it's going to interfere with him doing the will of him who sent him. This woman at the well had to be saved. The bride comes before the servant. The bride comes before the servant. So this is the Master's words for us before we take another step. While we know that just as Christ was a man and he had to eat, just like I'm his servant, I have to eat. Though we know that he has to eat, though we know that the children have to eat, though we know, this is what we have to remember first. First. While we're off buying food for him, trying to buy food for him, he's making us to know that he's the food of his dear children. I wonder if they tried to make an excuse for not being there. They were, after all, doing everything for him, weren't they? That they had every intention. That's what they meant. That's what they were planning to do. But he says to us, listen now, verse 35. Because this is his work, and because now he's made them to see what that he, while they were thinking they were doing something for him, but indeed if he would allow them to continue in it, it would have just been interference and separation and them worshiping themselves for what they had built. He stopped them. And now he's going to say, now here's the lesson in all this. Say not ye, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest. We're always planning, aren't we? We always got intentions to do. He says, don't say there's 4 months and then cometh the harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes. When Peter lifted up his eyes, who'd he see? Jesus only. Jesus only. The man, Christ Jesus only. And if you lift up your eyes and see him, you know what you're going to see? Know what you're going to see? Look at the next verse. And look on the fields. If you look up and you see Christ first and you look on the fields, you're going to see they're white already to harvest. His children already been redeemed. They're already white as snow. They're already justified. They're already perfect with the Father. You already have everything he's put in your hand. You already have everything he's going to use. He's not telling you he's going to give you something tomorrow to use for him. He's telling you what you got now he's going to give you to use. And here's what he's doing it to teach us. He that reapeth. That's what you do when you go and you harvest something. He that reapeth receiveth wages. You get a payment. What do you get when you get that payment? You get fruit, don't you? When you go out there and cut the bay leaves off the bay plant, you get bay leaves. When you go out there and cut the tomatoes off the tomato vine, you get tomatoes. You get a payment. And you gather fruit unto life eternal. Now, Paul said, it's not that I desire a gift from you, but I desire fruit, the work of God's grace in your heart that may abound to your account. Now look at this, verse 36. That both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. Are we going to rejoice? How are we going to rejoice together with Christ? It'll only be as we see that it's not our providing. We're not sowing. Well, I thought he said go forth and sow. What he's teaching us right here is we're not sowing. But Christ is sowing, and we're receiving the wages, the fruit that's freely been already made white and already been brought forth by him. By him. And herein, verse 37, is that saying true. One soweth, Christ is that one, and another reapeth. That's the work he's going to do through his bride, through his gospel, through his disciples. verse 38, I sent you to reap that whereon ye bestowed no labor. Other men labored, and you're entered into their labors. Now, to enhance the truth that this work is his, in the midst of teaching his disciples this, he saved that woman and a bunch of others without them even being around. Look, verse 39. Many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him for the saying of the woman, which testified, which went and said, he told me all that ever I did. So when the Samaritans were come unto him, they besought him that he would tarry with them, and he abode there 2 days. And many more believed. But why did they believe? Because of his own word. Because of his own word. Who is it that's speaking to me? Who's speaking to me? So let a man give himself to Christ according to how Christ has prospered every man in his own heart. According as Christ has spoken the word into the man's heart. According as Christ has built up the heart. If we do any building, it will only be as Christ uses us to say this gospel to somebody else to build up each other in this most holy, precious, separate gift of God called Christ doing it all. Faith. Verse 42. And they said unto the woman, now we believe, not because of thy saying, for we've heard him ourselves, and know that this is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. If I have many things to say unto you, but I can't right now. But let me ask you this. Who's the biggest giver in our midst? When we know that, we will begin to reap what he has already sown. I want you to take into consideration Clay, we know you have a need, and yet you've expressed that to us, and now it's almost like you're telling us not to provide for that need. That's not it at all. But what you're telling us, Clay, aren't you taking out of the mouth of your bride and out of the mouth of your own children who could be provided for by us? Mm-mm. No. You see, the abundance and the hope I have for that woman right there and for those children right there is that Christ establishes this work and he makes this work to prosper so that everybody knows it's his work that's doing it. And if ever we begin to try to build it ourselves, it'll be divided and separated and it won't prosper. Now, it may end up doing that anyway, but what I've been trying to declare to you is this: God's going to do it in such a way to where we have no doubt and no other thing to say than that God did this. So, it's not, can I talk you into doing this or you into doing that, or let's get together and talk about what this. No, that's not it. It's not it. It's me in my own heart. I want to tell you a story. There was a pastor I was talking to, and he and his wife were needing a little more than what they were receiving. And so he expressed it to the men. And the men in the congregation said, "We'll do it." And it was substantial. Substantial. They said, "We'll do it." Not each man in his own heart said, "I'll do it." And they said, "Tell her to go tomorrow, put in her 2-week notice." And she, it was a few months coming up before it was the end of the year. And she didn't want to leave her employer like that quickly. So she said, "I'm going to work for him through the rest of the year to help get everything in order." And this preacher and his wife got the financial statement, looked at it each month. And the amount wasn't there. Next month, wasn't there. Next month, it wasn't there. So she didn't quit her job because that wasn't there yet in the bank. Nope. She quit it. From that day forward, it was there. Who did that? God did that. I know that we're just like this Samaritan woman. We know everything there is to know. We want to build. We want to. But he's going to make us to know, like he did his disciples. "I'm building this work. I'm going to use you. But I'm going to first use you only after you've been made to know I'm doing it. And then you're going to do it each one cheerfully and say, 'I'll do it.'" Not because as a group effort, it was determined. Because it's all been agreed in one. He's doing it. Now that's something he has to teach us each in our heart. And when he does, he'll use us all together. And as he does it, he'll use us all together. All right.